pressures here, and we need to move forward with this omnibus habitat amendment. It's already way behind schedule, and I'm looking for a practical way to keep it moving. That's what I'm doing, and if we can just get a sense that the council wants to move in this direction and particularly toward opening closures, opening real estate, then I can get buy-in from industry. And I can go ahead and do what the right thing is as far as using the science is concerned. And my only question now is this doable in terms of the logistics? Can we do this?
David, it seems to me you're saying we're going to go ahead with our amendment, and it says this is no longer habitat area. So we're going to recommend it be open, but not recommend it be open until the Groundfish Committee and the Council takes action on the groundfish closure. And there's no reason to do that. Just, it seems to me, do your habitat work. And then once that's done, there's opportunities, if the Council does some stuff, to get stuff implemented by a number of ways. And by agreeing to delay, there might be other ways to open it rather than an action. Who knows? But the analysis of whether the mortality objectives should be lifted is Groundfish PDT, in my opinion, and Groundfish Science Center biologists and the whole business, and Groundfish Committee.
Doug? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent here, and I think for us to move forward and do something here, I think the first thing we have to do is remove this motion from the table. And I think the motion itself has some procedural problems because it's asking the council to initiate an action right now and it's not in the priority list right now. So what I would like to do is remove this from the table. Then I have a motion that's trying to get a sense from the council, is this an action that this council feels is important enough to go forward with in the future. With that kind of information, it can help us move forward with the habitat closure. So I'd like to make a motion to remove this from the table. And if I get a second.
Can I just withdraw the motion?
This motion is live right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you could make
a motion
to substitute.
I didn't realize that we'd already voted on this to take it off the table because it says we need a vote to bring it back up there.
Yeah, we're all set with that. What we would need is if you want, you can just make a motion to substitute if you have a different concept.
That was my intent.
Instead of wordsmithing this one.
I thought we had to take it off the table before you substitute. So I do have a motion to substitute. And Karen has it. And the motion is the Habitat Committee, and excuse me, this is sort of like a whereas and then a therefore. The Habitat Committee is considering options to modify the habitat closed areas in Georges Bank, Southern New England, based on information provided in the SASE model. And this is where the therefore be it resolved. Given that the groundfish fishery is now managed with ACLs and AMs under Amendment 16. It is the Council's intent to prioritize a groundfish management action in the near future that would eliminate or modify the groundfish mortality closures in Georges Bank and Southern New England area. If I can get a second.
Is there a second? Dave Preble. Go ahead, Doug.
So as I said, the intent with this is to get a sense of the council. Is this a direction, i.e. looking at removing the groundfish mortality closures, that this council in the future may want to take, or whether they feel that those things still need to be in place even under Amendment 16? If they do say this is something that they feel is an important issue in the future, and that we'd be looking at prioritizing this possibly in the next year, then it would help us with moving forward with some of the potential changes in the habitat areas. And again, there's some removal of habitat areas that Sassy's suggesting would be a good measure to take, and also some new areas within that area that it's also suggesting to be put in that are currently open areas.
Essentially what you're saying is that the Habitat Committee and Council aren't going to do the best job they can with habitat until they know that they're going to do something with mortality closures, because nobody's going to vote for additional closures. That's what you're saying. I mean, that's what we're trying to hedge against here, is that we're getting to a point where people don't want to even debate adding closures or changing habitat closures without addressing the mortality closures, which are one and the same in a lot of places, in Georgia's especially, and southern New England, without knowing that once the habitat boundaries change, those mortality boundaries will evaporate. And that's what we're talking about. We don't have the faith that we can just evaluate things strictly on habitat. We need to know that we're going to remove the mortality closures in order to proceed.
Are you trying to put words in my mouth, or do you want? That's your opinion.
No, I mean, I think that's what we're talking about here, is that we're really not going to move forward until we know that we can address the mortality closure issue as well. They won't enjoy the full support of as many people as it could.
It certainly will make, you'll have some people that will, that I believe may not fully support it if you're going to have additional areas closed, because some of the things that we've seen from this is that if you redistribute area fishing effort by keeping areas closed, you're actually doing more damage to the habitat than opening them up. And so that's a key thing behind this habitat plan that Sassy's showing us. There's some cases we're doing more harm than good right now by keeping these things closed.
Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the maker of the motion, in the Gulf of Maine, we have the catch limits and accountability measures in Amendment 16 also. You didn't offer up the mortality closures in the Gulf of Maine. I was wondering why.
The reason behind that is that the data that we have for this SASI model identifying critical habitat areas is much more robust in Georges Bank and southern New England area, because of the up in Gulf of Maine, what we're relying on is trawl hang-ups and grease weights that were done back in the 30s. And so we feel more comfortable with this particular, with what's going on in southern New England and the changes that are being suggested by the model in southern New England and Georges Bank.
So those mortality controls in there with under Amendment 16, the catch limits and accountability measures, you might as well take that right out. So what you're trying to say is you want to open up habitat in the closed areas on Georges Bank and southern New England and not in the Gulf of Maine. It's got nothing to do with mortality. Is that correct? I mean, mortality is mortality. We have, you know, catch limits and accountability measures in both areas.
If the council wants to open up mortality, wants to remove some of the mortality closed areas up in the Gulf of Maine, that's fine, too. I don't have any objection to that.
I'd like to amend the motion, if I could, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Would you strike after closures, put a period, and strike in the Georges Bank, southern New England area? Just strike from in to area. Thank you. Motion to amend, yeah.
Is there a second? So this change would broaden the scope of analysis that would be done.
Right, and if analysis comes back that it's not warranted to open the mortality closures in the Gulf of Maine, so be it, but I think it should be analyzed.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion on the motion? David Gaetham.
Well, I think, as Doug said, the information we have on habitat in the Gulf of Maine
is not as conclusive as it is on Georges Bank in southern New England. It's a lot finer scale in those areas, and the information we have in the Gulf of Maine also tends to indicate from SASE that the areas that are closed are not inappropriate from a habitat point of view. So you can do this, but you may spend an awful lot of time analyzing something that's already been analyzed and which appears is not going to change anyway. If anything happens with habitat in the Gulf of Maine, it would probably be a couple small areas that may be added on the main coast, as an example, that are complex bottom. But, I mean, we could do it. It just, I think it's going to be a lot of work to end up at the same point we're at right now.
Yeah, I think though, this change and the analysis that would occur, you'd have an analysis that evaluates the value of mortality closures only, right? In other words, the analysis would look at the value of the mortality closures in the Gulf of Maine and how necessary they are.
Well, that's another issue. We have several types of closures in the Gulf of Maine. Some are spawning closures, some are mortality closures. So I think the motion, the way it's worded right now, it would be everything. And I think specifically we had already excluded any spawning closures from you know, dealing with those.
Well, Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just curious, Dave, in terms of the level of habitat information, the difference between Georges Bank and Gulf of Maine habitat information, what is the level of difference on a scale of 1 to 10, and why is there that difference?
Yeah, I was going to raise my hand for is to bring that up. What we're talking about is confidence limits for the data from the two areas. And the SASE model generates a lot of information. One of the things it does tell us is what the confidence limits are in that data. And the confidence limits for the actions that are being proposed for the Georges Bank Southern New England area are in the 95% range. And for the Gulf of Maine, it's less than half that. What it has done for the Gulf of Maine is that it has pointed out for us areas where we need additional research. SASE does that as well. And so we're talking about a difference in the actual confidence limits, which has been numerically established. The LISA analysis has given us that information on just how robust, as Doug pointed out, the robustness of the data. And the other thing I want to, that goes along with that is that there's also another problem with opening up an area that doesn't really open, and that is that actually changes the SASE outputs, because the SASE outputs depend upon where people will be fishing, and this is why it complicates things for us if we don't have some understanding that when we say, okay, this doesn't have to be a habitat closed area, but the bottom's going to stay closed anyway. In addition to the political problem of people not buying in, we also have to rerun the SASE model, because the SASE model will not give us the same outputs. So I don't know how different they'd be. I don't have that kind of technical expertise, and we don't have the people here to answer that question. Well, they'd have to run it anyway to be able to answer it. But I do know that by retaining that bottom as closed, that the SASE outputs would, in fact, not be exactly the same. And also, is one last thing. I don't have any problem at all with what Mike is putting up here. That's a groundfish issue, and I sympathize with where he's coming from with it, for other reasons.
Tom Neese.
If I might make a suggestion, speaking only towards the groundfish side of the issues here. I think we tend to get hung up on the title of what the closure is for, whether it's a mortality closure or a spawning closure. The reality is that when you go in the record and try and look at what the reasons were for many of these closures, it's very murky. And in some cases, it's not explicitly stated why a closure exists. I think what you're talking about here with respect to groundfish is you're saying, in essence, we have a new management system. And do we need closures? You know, I'm using the term broadly. Do we need closures? And I'm not sure you want to say, do we need closures just for mortality? Because you may find out, if we look at it, that you need closures for other reasons than mortality. You may need them, you know, common answer here is you need them to protect spawning fish. You're going to minimize the effects of fishing on spawning aggregations, or however you want to word it. So that might be one reason you need a closure. It may not need to be year-round. It may not need to be rolling closures in the Gulf of Maine, but you may need a closure that way. You may find as you look into it that you need closures for other reasons. You know, there have been arguments made, and I'm not going to weigh in on whether they're valid or not, that, you know, closures help to buffer for scientific uncertainty, or closures help to buffer for species diversity. And I don't know if these reasons are valid or not. So my suggestion is on this motion would be, rather than get hung up on saying we're only going to look at mortality closures, or we're only going to, you know, say either we're going to look at all the closures, or we're going to look at the year-round closures if you just want to focus on the year-round closures for now, and then recognize that down the road you may have closures that are identified for reasons that, you know, sitting in this room here today, we may not have thought were really important, but as we look into it, we might. Now, I got to admit that the problem with that is that that complicates the analyses as we go forward, and you may not be willing to accept that, you know, that's going to make the job harder. So, you know, there may turn out that the Groundfish Committee wants to focus more on specific issues as we get into it. But I think at this level that you're talking about today, you know, just say that we want to look at groundfish closures. Now, I don't know if that helps the habitat folks with their problem or not, but I think that's really what you want to do with respect to the groundfish closed area issue.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having a hard time with this motion because I don't really know what it means. It's a statement. It's not requesting analysis we had a motion that I supported at our last meeting that failed. That was asking for analysis of the existing mortality closures. That failed. This is a statement that it's an intent to prioritize a groundfish action that we don't know what we're going to prioritize in the fall. So I just trying to help me out, Doug, here. I understand we had four issues the other day from the Habitat Committee. They all, I thought a council consensus that we move ahead with the development as we continue our omnibus work, and I'm trying to wrap my head around this particular motion.
Doug.
Maybe I can help clarify things. The understanding I heard, one, we've already set our priorities for this year. And as I understand, we've fully obligated our staff. And barring taking one of those groundfish management actions off the table, it's probably not going to happen this year. So what we're trying to get from the standpoint of the Habitat Committee is a sense of the council. Is this something that they're willing to consider in the near future to prioritize? Is this something at this point in time, based on the fact that we're now in groundfish, you have ACLs, AMs, you're dealing, and even the common pool is going to be under a hard tack very soon. Is it something that they would like to prioritize in the future, looking at getting rid of groundfish closed areas and then building things back up again? As you were at the Habitat meeting, our whole the thing we're looking at here is essentially taking out the existing habitats and building it up based on what SASE is. Where's the appropriate areas? We just wanted to get a sense for the council whether they still feel these other groundfish areas are still important at this point. If it gets voted down, then that clearly says, well, that they, at least at this point in time, this council feels that they need to be in place. But if they vote in favor of this, then it says we're willing in the future, not that we can bind the hands of a future council, this council as it is feels that this is something we need to look at in the future. And that can help us move forward with the Habitat Committee. Either way, just get the sense. We don't want to initiate an action now because we've already set our priorities for this year.
Thanks for the explanatory.
Jim Fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you explained the problem fairly well when you were talking before. I think the place we get hung up is when you start talking about these areas individually, and people get all upset because, you know, for one reason or another, they may be nervous about creating openings where there are closures, et cetera. We're going to show in the omnibus amendment a lot of areas that are closed right now, probably for no good reason, and we're going to show a lot of other areas that probably need more protection. And unless you look at the whole picture, people get very nervous. And then on top of that, add in the mortality closures, which may basically nullify anything we do with the habitat closures, makes it even more complicated.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is not a new problem. This is a reoccurring problem. And, you know, I would be supportive, and I'm supportive of solving this problem. I would be supportive of at the next council meeting if staff can present the council with visual aids on the screen and walk us through the dilemma that we're facing and can have thought through a bit about how we can best handle tackling this issue in terms of a timeline, logistics, who goes first, all of these things we're trying to do on the fly. I do think it's an issue we have to address, and I think we have to address it quickly, but I think that would be something that would help everybody who's not on the Habitat Committee especially understand exactly what's being discussed here. Without the benefit of having a visual aid, I think you're not sure exactly what's going on. Dr. Pierce, and then Dave Preble.
Yeah, consistent with that position and suggestion, Mr. Chairman, I would move to postpone consideration of this motion until the next council meeting.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rip.
And it's not to table, it's to postpone consideration.
Anything further, Dave Preble?
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that, as long as we know which way we're going. And I think your suggestion is a very wise one. Just where this began was 2 days ago when I had 10 minutes to, and all I wanted to get was what basically we're going to do. So I think this is a good way to go, and let's get it all out on the table and look at it. I think that's a good way to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only my concern is the Gulf of Maine. The data is not good enough to take areas away, but you can add areas. And even if it's a small area off of Maine, I mean, that's important to somebody. You know, and part of that western Gulf of Maine closure, it's all mud, the southeast part of that.
Dave?
Yeah, make it real quick here. No, Mike, the data isn't good enough to justify either opening or closing. So we're not looking at closing any additional areas in the Gulf of Maine. I don't believe that I know that we don't have the data confidence to take any kind of action of that sort in the Gulf of Maine. What SASE has done for us there is it has told us where we have the greatest weaknesses and where we really need to devote some attention. So that's all we can do with it right now, and that's actually a step forward. But we need to get the confidence levels on the data for the Gulf of Maine high enough so that we can open areas up there that may not need to be open. So I can't recommend to the committee that we misuse SASE by taking a low confidence level situation and turning it into a management action. That's where that's why we've got the wrong areas closed now. So,
Jimmy,
I can support the motion to amend, but I just need to say that I think this council is failing to meet its obligations, and that we should be looking at mortality closures in and of themselves because we're not reaching OY. And we're a long ways from it. And fish are dying of old age, and we're losing all the yield to the nation. So I reject the previous motion in the sense that they should not be tied together. They should be stand alone. But I can support the motion to push it to next week, not liking the motion that we'll push it to, next meeting. But we are really failing. We are really failing. We're losing yield every single day now. And, we talk about infrastructure. The best way to preserve an infrastructure is put pounds of fish over it. We have pounds of fish out there that we could be harvesting. And we're not even looking at it. We're not even thinking about it. It's a failure, big time. Thank you.
All right, so if this passes, what I would ask is that our committee chairs of the Habitat and Groundfish work together with their staffs to put together a good presentation on these issues, how they overlap, how they're separate, and bring to bear whatever information is available at the time. And I'll devote a significant amount of time on the next agenda for that.
And some options for how to deal with that.
Yeah, so we'll work on options as well. Anything further? Go to the audience, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. I think that's a good suggestion, but I fully agree with Jimmy Odlin, and I followed the process not only in groundfish and habitat, but in scallops, and you can't forget scallops because there are other alternatives to habitat besides year-round closures. One of them is reduction of frequency and intensity of fishing, and that's what we do with the scallop rotational areas. So I envision a system occurring, knowing full well the data from the habitat process and being around long enough to know the groundfish process and being the chair of that JAR process that identified those habitat closures. I really think that the council has to move forward to eliminate or modify the mortality closures, taking into account what Tom has said about whether, in fact, you want to replace some of it with seasonal spawning closures, not necessarily advocating that. But this, as when they identify the new areas that have a higher value from habitat, it doesn't automatically mean you close those areas. It means you reduce the effort in those areas. And you have part of this process is going to be redefining the boundaries of the Georgia Spank scallop access areas. Because right now they're just an artifact of where the groundfish mortality closures are. I would, change those boundaries to meet the habitat objectives as well as achieving OY and minimizing bycatch. In the Gulf of Maine, again, those boundaries should be considered as well because you still could open those areas, get rid of the mortality thing, and then just address the habitat issue by maybe seasonal closures or some other mechanism to reduce groundfish effort in some of those areas to meet, to get below the SASE trigger levels, if you will, of habitat impact. So it definitely needs a major amount of time in April for discussion, but scallops is an important aspect of this as well and should be a part of that process. In other words, the scallop PDT should come up with some suggested expansion or modification of the Georges Bank scallop boundaries in light of a reconsideration of all boundaries, having some awareness of what the SASE model is indicating for areas of habitat concern. And I'd say the groundfish PDT needs to do the same thing with the Gulf of Maine based on our current level of knowledge. So, but we're not going to move forward until those boundaries, the mortality closure, groundfish mortality closure boundaries are eliminated because right now they have a major negative impact on achieving OY, not only in groundfish but in scallops. They increase bycatch in the scallop fishery, and they certainly increase habitat impacts according to the SASE model. So that's my comment.
So what you're saying, Ron, is you want the Habitat Committee to identify the new scallop access areas.
No, I'm saying the scallop PDT has to be...
I'm kidding. No, I think you've made some good points, and appreciate that. Tom Neese, did you have your hand up? Okay. Back to the council. You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen opposed? Really? One opposed? Abstentions? No abstentions. Motion carries 13-1. No abstentions. Rip?
I think there is going to be one more motion, Mr. Chairman, that I'm aware of, and then we would move on to a brief discussion on TMGC.
Okay, Dave Gathel.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to establish a control date for accumulation limits in the groundfish fishery.
What day?
Oh, I wanted. I had to ask Gene. Can we make it today if it was up to me? But I thought I'm not sure what the requirements are.
Let's get a second first. Seconded by Doug Grout. Okay, David, you had some questions?
Yeah, what is the earliest date we can do it?
Customarily what we've done is to establish the date it's published in the Federal Register. So you're asking NIMS to publish as soon as possible in the Federal Register this control date, and that becomes the date, the actual date.
Okay, so procedurally, how would I say that in the motion? Just to leave it the way it is? Or
to request NIMS to publish in the Federal Register as soon as possible a control date, or the control date. I mean, you can put that at the beginning of the motion. Yeah, a control date to establish accumulation limits.
Mike Leary.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the maker of the motion, if you had accumulated over the cap, which hasn't been determined yet, if you were over and you had these permits before the control date, would you be grandfathered in?
This isn't a cap. This is just to state that anybody who accumulates further permits after this date may be treated differently than people who had the permits before that date. It doesn't establish a cap. It just says that we are letting people know that something may happen if you continue to accumulate permits from this date forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume this means all accumulation, state permit banks, federal permit banks, sectors, and individual owners for accumulation limits?
Right. Whoever owns a permit, corporate entity, permit bank, anybody, whatever. You know, I mean, how are permits owned now? They're owned in a variety of ways, from a sole proprietorship to a corporation.
Yeah, I think, you know, this discussion is helpful to try to ferret out a little bit to give the public a little more notice of what sort of the scope of what might be considered. Because, you know, if it's individual accumulation limits, you know, these things, it could be applied from anything from vessels to permits, days at sea, PSCs, landings, fishing histories. I presume all of these things would be on the table and not limited to those things, as well as sector accumulation limits, or not accumulation limits, but ACE limits or something. Is that what we're...
I hadn't thought in terms of sector.
Are you just talking about individuals?
I'm talking about individuals, and to me, individuals includes permit banks because they are individuals as entities.
Because I think it'll be, you know, we could try to wordsmith all of that here, but if we could get the council to agree that the council staff works with NIMS staff to adopt language that reflects the discussion that has occurred if this motion passes. Or we could try to wordsmith it in a general way now. Paul?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I like the idea of just keep it very vague, just all accumulation limits, and you're wanting that whatever you decide to do with ACE or sectors or permit banks down the road, this apply. This is very general, all accumulation limits of quota, of permits, of everything.
That's right. I mean, that's fine. What I want to do is just put people on notice that from this day forward, you know, you could be treated differently. We have no idea what that difference might be, or it might be nothing. But at least to warn people that this is a possibility.
I think the person wouldn't be treated differently. Any permit taken after could be treated differently, right?
That's right. I tend to think of people, but yes, it's the permit that actually could be treated differently, I suppose. It depends on how you word it. That's why I think rather than us spending a huge amount of time on this, the council, like Gene said, council staff and NIMS staff should word this notice in the Federal Register in the way they deem.
Tom?
I just want to make, there's been some talk here, and I just have a question that I'm going to word in the form of a statement, but put a question mark on the end as if I'm from Minnesota. So aren't what we, normally when we do a control date, and Gene can correct me if I'm wrong, it says that people who acquire a permit after this date, something may happen to them, but then the language goes on to say, this doesn't preclude us treating people that bought things before this date differently either. I want to make sure that's understood here as well. In other words, the control date is a marker, but it doesn't really tie the hands of how the council deals with things. I just want to make sure that's what people think. Otherwise, we're going to have to word it differently than we have in the past.
Yeah, I would suggest that as part of the discussion that we're having related to this motion in terms of intent, that we reflect on the language that is in the scoping document that's being held back for a while, where it's quite specific in noting our concern about individual accumulation caps or sector accumulation caps on a stock-specific or fishery-wide level. I think that's where the focus is. We're talking about individuals. We're talking about sectors in terms of what can be accumulated. So I would offer that up as an element of the the nature of whatever announcement is described that is put out to describe what we're attempting to do.
All right, Frank, and then Jimmy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very uncomfortable with this motion. In fact, I intend to vote against it, not because of what's in it. It's just I don't think we put anybody on notice that that's what we were doing today. I'd feel a lot more comfortable if this was done at the April meeting. We've heard from a few people here today and a few other meetings that this is what they want to go forward, but I don't know if the rest of the industry was here, if they would support this or not support it. I'm very uncomfortable with this one. I intend to vote against it.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm going to abstain from this, but I want to point out, I think we ought to think through the effects of something like this. And we have been dealing with overcapacity and inefficiency in this fisheries since I've been on this council. Amendment 7, 13, and 16 all said we had too much capacity and all said that some consolidation was desirable. And we actually took some barriers down as far as how to transfer permits and everything in those, each time we did one of those amendments. Now, the effect of something like this, will do nothing to hurt a larger operator, but a small guy that doesn't have enough, that is going out of business, is dead. You bankrupted him because he can't even sell to anybody. Nobody can buy when you start something like this. And now we've got a situation where we need contraction, and you froze it. Now, some people think that's a good thing, but when you freeze something, you have unintended consequences that you ought to think through. I can't believe you're putting this up there, but nobody can move. Nobody's going to be moving. Nobody can sell. Nobody can leave the industry. They're stuck.
I think it depends on where you sit, Jim, because the council is looking at setting accumulation limits that may be at 20 permits, and then the guy who's got 30 might be out of 10, as opposed to the guy that got one may be able to get 19 more. So it depends on where you sit.
I'm sorry to debate, but that's the whole point. You don't know. That's the whole point of what I'm saying is, so you froze it. You froze it to the fact that if you knew it was 20, then you might have accomplished something, but you don't. So a guy with 10 has to be just as scared as a guy with 5, as a guy with 2. We don't know. So it's just, I believe, Paul, that's the exact point I'm trying to make.
Jim's point is, until something happens with this date and some future action, people are going to be very nervous to engage in any permanent transactions. Anyone else on the council? I've got Terry and then Mr. Libby.
Yeah, I tend to agree with both Frank and Jim. We don't know what we're going to do. As a state trying to set up a state permit bank, it makes me a little bit nervous. I can't see the industry as they're struggling to try to make things go, take the flexibility out of them. I'd feel more comfortable of if we're going to issue a control date, doing so at the April meeting. I will reluctantly vote against this motion.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Kind of the same comments Terry had. I'm concerned about the permit bank. I understand the concerns everybody else has. I'd like to see more with it, like the concept more developed, not just we're going to have a control date, so people would have something to bank on. Oh, I can buy 5 more permits without going over before we do this. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Oh, yeah. Gene.
Yeah, I understand fully these effects that this may have on the market. I think you have to look at this. I think this forces the council to look at where you're heading with this accumulation limit debate. If at some point you decide to have accumulation limits or caps or whatever you want to call them, are you going to make them retroactive? If you are, then you've probably done a disservice by not warning the public of that. If you're not intending on that, then it creates perhaps an incentive to speculatively buy up boats, permits, fishing opportunities in order to best position oneself in the fishery. So it's a real dilemma, and I understand that. And I think you've got to be serious about actually getting to the end game here if you vote for this control date. If you don't vote, if it doesn't pass, the cat is sort of out of the bag. I mean, you're still left with a lot of uncertainty. What is the council going to do? You're still probably chilling the market now that you've initiated this discussion about accumulation limits and accumulation caps, regardless of what happens with the control date. So it's a very difficult, tricky kind of question that you have to think through.
Pat.
Yeah, just to amplify on those points, I mean, this is what I was trying to say earlier. Now you've started to talk about it. So you've already changed behavior in the fishery. People are going to react to the fact that you're talking about it. And I don't agree that it freezes things up. Sure, someone with a lot of permits is going to think twice. But someone with just a few, or that just owns a small allocation, it's not an issue for them. So I understand as well that no matter what, you're going to change behavior, but I really think since you are talking about it, that it's the fair thing to do is to be clear to the industry.
Sally?
Thank you. Yes, I'm going to support this motion. By doing nothing, if this motion failed, we'd be sending a signal to the industry too. So it's not as if this is the only thing that's going to affect how people make their business decisions to accumulate additional permits or to sell permits or to lease permits, waiting until a decision is made. I think that this sends a very clear signal, and I think that is the fair thing to do. I mean, the question obviously still remains, what happens and what's the difference between before and after the control date? But this puts some pressure on the council to actually do something and make a decision on what we're going to do with accumulation limits rather than leaving it completely up in the air. So I'd urge people to support this, and we'll keep moving forward on this rather than continuing to delay. Thank you.
David?
Yeah, I think Sally pretty much said what was on my mind. My intent was to focus the debate here, and it's already done it. Once people started talking about accumulation limits, as far as I was concerned, from that point on, the cat's out of the bag. People have started making decisions around 10 o'clock this morning based on the discussions around this table about buy or sell. Now what we're doing is formalizing that and saying those decisions, be aware to everybody, not just the people that happen to be sitting in the room today, but be aware to everybody in the groundfish fishery that things may happen. And that will do two things. It'll force us to actually do something or not, and it'll get people to start coming and discussing this from whatever perspective they have on the subject. And that's what we've got to do, because if we don't do that, basically I think we'll just sit here and basically spin our wheels forever. If we're serious about accumulation limits, then we have to deal with it. If we're not serious about it, and a whole bunch of people come and they're really angry that you're even talking about it, then we'll say, fine, we'll drop it and move on. But I think you have to make something formal, and that's all this is an attempt to tell people that from this day forward, something may happen. You don't have to have been here today to have participated in this, because it doesn't bind us to do anything specific. It just says, from this day forward, something may happen. And therefore, you better start paying attention to this and start coming to the Groundfish Committee and to the council meetings if you're interested in it.
Go to the audience. Jim?
The council's been through this process time and time again, or before, actually. And I would have hoped we would have sort of learned the lesson, particularly in light of what happened with general category scallops. You had a finite number of people who were doing this for years and years, and it wasn't a very big group. And then when things started to move along and things got worse in the groundfish fishery, people looked to this as a possible salvation. But the minute we mentioned control date, I think you ended up with over 2,000 permits, even though they knew that some of them might not be recognized in the future. And even those that came in at the very last minute all had reasons why they shouldn't be excluded, even though it was long after a well-debated control date was finally established. And some of us could see it and warned about it, and the council was reluctant to put it in place. I think now that you've spoken about this in earnest today, I mean, this has always been a possibility to people who know anything about the fisheries and the way it's been going. Pretty much everyone expects this to happen. But now that you've spoken of it, you need to put it in place. Once you put it in place, everyone has gotten the fair shake as far as when this date is expected to be established. The date of publication in the National Register. Everyone will know that. And then someone who comes in today or tomorrow
might be treated different than someone comes in 2 days after it's published. People will expect that. I think that's the fairest thing you can do for them. This isn't a question about who you let in or who you keep out or anything along those lines. It's giving everyone the same opportunity, and that'll be established today if you go ahead and establish this, the motion, vote the motion in, and ask for the date to be established. Once again, I think that's the fairest thing you can do to the people within the industry. You're not stating what you expect to happen based on this particular date, but something most likely will. Doesn't have to, but it most likely will. And at some point in time, you'll all understand what that effect is going to be. Thank you.
Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is accurate to say that the council has begun a discussion about accumulation limits, but from our perspective, what hasn't been defined is the problem. Why do you need to have accumulation limits? And some people have suggested that there's excessive consolidation going on, but what does that really mean? I mean, do we really know what is excessive consolidation? We've known for 2 decades that we have an overcapacity problem in groundfish. I believe the council wrote a letter to the Secretary of Commerce this year asking for a buyout or suggesting that a buyout was appropriate for New England groundfish. If you go on the council's website and do a word search in your groundfish documents, any of the amendments or frameworks, and search for the word consolidation, you'll find out that it's a wonderful thing. According to those documents, it reduces fishing effort, it reduces overcapacity, it reduces impacts on habitat, it reduces impacts on protected species, it increases economic efficiency, it reduces costs. It does all the things that you've been trying to do for the past 15 years in this fishery. So when does that become excessive? We're trying to wrap our heads around when does that become excessive. And I don't think we've defined that issue yet. There seems to be a lot of fear that some individuals own too much, but nobody's really defined what that is. So I would agree with the speakers who said that this conversation, and the more vague it is, the worse it is, about these issues is detrimental to the people like Ted Platts, who spoke earlier, saying he's trying to buy into the market and buy his way back into groundfish. Well, where would you tell Ted to stop? Where would it be too much for Ted to have? So, you talked earlier today about looking at what level of consolidation has occurred to date. We need to get that information. We need to find out, is there a problem here? Is there a problem? People complain about the cost of permits and the cost of leasing. Well, nobody likes the cost of leasing except the guy who's selling, right? He likes that the price is high. I just think that the problem really hasn't been really defined, and that what you're doing with this whole discussion about these limits and controlling how much people own is detrimental in light of the goals that you've had of trying to get this number of boats and players down in this fishery to a manageable level. So reflect back on all those documents that you've approved that have said that consolidation is a good thing in this fishery, and then decide where does it need to stop. Thank you.
Brett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Tolley with the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. I just wanted to share again a few excerpts from 2 letters that will be submitted to the council that I think are related to this issue at hand and may be helpful in thinking through this. This first excerpt comes from Billy Chapralis, Massachusetts fisherman. He's been a commercial ground fisherman for 40 years. And Billy wanted to be here today. He really cares about this issue, and this is what he wrote in his letter. Consolidation is a problem, and the council needs to explore ways to protect fleet diversity. One concern I have is that if the council moves too slow, the consolidation will happen at even a faster rate, and we won't be able to go back. I recommend some sort of freeze be placed to protect the fleet diversity we currently have until measures are put in place. That's from Billy. And this other excerpt comes from B.G. Brown, a commercial fisherman out of Massachusetts as well. B.G. fishes a 30-foot gillnetter boat. He's been fishing for 25 years. And this is what B.G. says. I feel that it is very important that some sort of mechanism be put into place that would prohibit any one entity from owning a large percentage of the quota. Thanks.
Aaron.
Thank you, Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center in the Northeast Coastal Community Sector. So I want to let you know that we started operating a permit bank, Penobscot East Resource Center. So I run a permit bank and I support this motion. I was surprised to hear Maine council members voicing concern. Personally, right now, I'm deeply concerned for Maine's future in the fishery. And I mentioned some of the statistics earlier about leasing. For the year-to-date between 2009 and 2010, we've seen Maine landings down about 50%. I think without some protection for fleet diversity or some acknowledgement that you're going to take an action for protection for fleet diversity in the future, we're going to see that change institutionalized. So I heard a concern earlier today that we don't want a grab by one state from another. I think we're already seeing a grab from one state to another. It may not be intentional, but we're seeing a massive migration of landings out of Maine into Massachusetts, and granted, that has been going on for a long time. I don't see this motion as a threat to the small boat fleet by any means. I see an action as a threat to the small boat fleet. I think that by passing this motion, you're simply telling the industry that you're going to do something. In June, this council voted to preserve fleet diversity. You passed a motion that said that you want to maintain inshore and offshore fleets to the extent possible, maintain a diverse groundfish fishery, including different gear types, vessel sizes, geographic locations and levels of participation, maintain a balance in the geographic distribution of landings to protect fishing communities and the infrastructure they provide, and prohibit any person from acquiring excessive access to the resource in order to prevent extraction of disproportionate economic rents from other permit holders. So at that time, you signaled that that was the direction that you're going in. That was in June. You started this conversation last April. It's already going to be a long time before you go out for scoping. It looks like possibly September, I think is what I heard. If you're trying to signal to the industry that at some point you're going to take some protections for fleet diversity, then I think that you need to vote for this motion. So if you're in favor of some protections for fleet diversity, at some point, when you're ready to define what that is and when that is, then I think you need to vote for this. Thank you.
Mike.
Hello. Thank you for having me speak, Mr. Chairman, council members. My name is Michael Love. I have a mid-sized trawler. And I'm a member of Sector. I have, some people say, probably a decent amount of permits, what, 700,000 pounds or something. I forget exactly now. But anyway, a little background where I'm coming from. And to Maggie's comments, which are interesting, and it is a nebulous point to go to, as to how much consolidation, how much is enough, how much is too little. But let's look at it, put a finer point on it. And that is, let's just assume for a minute that one of the larger permit owners in the region, who actually is not here today, or represents a whole bunch of permits, is not here today, to my knowledge. Let's say he cuts a deal with another person who is a representative of a large amount of fishing effort who actually is here today. Those two people cut a deal. One buys the other. Now we're going to have the discussion the next day and say, at what point is too much consolidation too much? By God, it's already happened then, hasn't it? With one deal between two private parties. Council be damned. process be damned, the fishery going to hell, basically. We need to have this passed. People need to be put on notice. Bankers, finance people who are financing these sort of things need to know that, you know, there may be a change, you know, going forward. Otherwise, this will all be wrapped up really quick, and whatever scraps the rest of us that are left, it will really be inconsequential. It will really be much really more to talk about. You'll have probably just one big Uber group with all the quota, and we're done. I would support that we definitely put a controlled language of what we're doing here in place. Thank you.
Good. Back to the council. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 9 opposed. 4 opposed. Abstentions. 1 abstention. Dr. Pierce.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
David, I'm sorry to interrupt you. 1 second.
Is the understanding that we'll work out the flesh out the language with staff understood with respect to that motion and what we put in the Federal Register to reflect the
Yep,
debate?
That was the discussion all along.
Okay.
So, Dr. Pierce, back to you.
Thanks, John. In the groundfish part of your binder, number 9, you'll find a letter from Eric Schwab to John Parapolato regarding, in his words, the National Marine Fisheries Service dialogue with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts regarding the economic impact of catch limits and sector management for the New England groundfish fishery. And then he indicated in that letter to John, in his words, his belief that lasting solutions to problems raised by the Commonwealth are best addressed through the New England Fishery Management Council public process. So, with that said, he then forwarded the Massachusetts Marine Fisheries Institute report to John for distribution to the council. And you all have that report. It's attached, I think, to number 9. That report was highlighted first day of the council meeting through the mayor's council that met here in this hotel. Presentations were given. There was a bit of a dialogue there.
Uh, 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 uh,